With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. The forecast of another El Nino raises water hopes and flooding fears. California has seen dramatic increases in reservoir levels and surface water supplies as a result of an El Nino weather pattern this year that brought drenching atmospheric rivers. It followed a La Nina pattern that delivered 3 years of searing drought. But with farmers and ranchers suddenly blessed with ample water supplies, state and federal officials said last week they expect to release water from reservoirs to create more water storage space. That's because of fears of potential severe flooding from a predicted second consecutive El Nino year. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Now several parts of California are quarantined by aphids for citrus pests. More after the break. Longlung bean has been detected in more parts across the state, which is why USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, along with CDFA, has expanded the quarantine areas for HLB, also known as citrus greening. During routine surveys, aphids researchers detected the citrus greening disease. The quarantine areas now include Ventura County and portions of Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, and San Diego counties. According to APHIS, early detection and removal of infected trees are critical to preventing the spread of the disease. However, it is difficult to identify HLB-infected trees because they may remain asymptomatic for months up to years after infection. Control of the ACP vector and removal of the diseased trees are key to maintaining productive citrus. APHIS is applying safeguarding measures on the interstate movement of citrus from the quarantine areas in California. For up-to-date information on those areas, to view interactive maps, and to find resources for growers, packers, and transporters, you can visit citrusinsider.org. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
Even with a focused effort to advance agricultural equipment, the overall landscape of ag technology is still in some of the early stages. CEO of Pacific Ag Rentals, Bart Walker, moderated a panel on ag tech automation at last month's FIRA USA event in Salinas. Walker noted that there is still a lot of developmental possibilities on the horizon.
I really believe we're at the start of the agriculture technology revolution. If we're talking about the music industry, we're still in reel-to-reel. You know, we haven't gotten to 8-track, we haven't gotten to 33 records, we haven't gotten to 45s, haven't gotten to CDs, and you know, the millennials will have to look that up online to see what those are. But, you know, we're such the beginning stages and also the expensive stages. 7 years ago, when we brought Robovator into the United States and started pushing that, there were three weeders, you know, three weeding technologies that were available at that time. Now there's 30. You can burn it. You can squirt it. You can zap it. You can laser it. You can, you know, put some high frequency sound on it. There's tons of ways to kill a weed now. So it's looking at who's going to be here next year out of those 30 people. And what else do they have in their deck, right? Everybody has a weeder. Okay, what's next?
The Organic Fertilizer Association of California is hosting another Sustainable Pest Management and Production Workshop later this month. The continuing education event will get underway at 8 a.m. on Thursday, October 26th at the CPDES Hall in Fresno. Along with several product label updates, some of the topics of discussion will include options for mating disruption of navel orangeworm, biological fungicides, and mating disruption of vine mealybug. Area IPM advisor Dr. Jalindra Rajal will be discussing biological control of walnut husk fly, and viticulture farm advisor George Zhuang will also be presenting information on grapevine fungal disease and its management. Over 6 hours of CCA units and 4.5 hours of DPR units have been approved for the event. More information about the workshop is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, last year was a record year for dairy exports, but this year it has slowed down due to market fluctuations in different regions around the globe. Alex Peterson is the chairman of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, and he says the council has been working on growing markets in niche areas to diversify dairy's global portfolio. Mexico is buying a lot of U.S. dairy, while Southeast Asia has seen some slowdown. So the council is targeting some new markets with specific products. Peterson recently visited Japan to market cheese to a popular chef.
Just a tremendous amount of possibilities in Japan. A, there's a bunch of people. B, they like cheese. They like good cheese. And one of the ways we're building demand for U.S. cheese in Japan is the Hattori Culinary School. So training chefs and culinary students on USA cheese. The over 1,000 different varieties we have, from the most, you know, kind of exquisite artisan niche cheese to the most versatile, you know, universal type commodity cheese that we offer. This culinary school is just a phenomenal way to reach chefs that are emerging in the market, in a market where food service is a huge part of what goes on. And the master chef of that school, Hattori, was the original Iron Chef. If you remember the Iron Chef show, it was going on in Japan for 20 years, and he was kind of the origin of it. So a very high level, high class, but it's the same principle whether you're building demand domestically or internationally. You have to get the people that are making the moves on what products are being consumed and influence the influencers. And so going to chefs and then also going into the retail space and training the people behind the counter that are selling dairy products about the quality of USA cheese and the attributes that it brings, so that when somebody says, oh, what should I get here? They say, oh, you should try this U.S. cheese.
But the work doesn't stop at the Iron Chef. Peterson's also been in Southeast Asia spreading the word that dairy can answer protein needs of the population.
Singapore also is a place where we have a kind of a brick and mortar hub for USA dairy exports. Because it's 12 time zones away, it's good to have people on call 24/7, essentially. And that market is such a hub for all of Southeast Asia, where we see a tremendous opportunity for growth. We're talking about 16 countries that have 600 million people that are looking to increase the nutrition that they're intaking. And there's no denser, higher quality nutrition than dairy nutrition. And they're starting to figure out ways to, A, try our products that we have kind of demonstrated that we do incredibly well. But also we, as U.S. DEC, are helping our domestic processors figure out how to adapt their products into how they are already consuming food. And so if we can take their, you know, morning drink and get them to put dairy protein isolates in it to really beef up that nutrition for immunity for an aging population or whatever it is, that's a win as well. So just finding ways to connect dots, build relationships, and provide a great dairy experience for customers.
As he alluded to, marketing dairy isn't all about selling cheese to restaurateurs. The Dairy Council is marketing everything from common dairy products to specific ingredients, such as dairy protein isolates. This is where the specialists come in. The staff works better to understand cultural food and flavor needs in order to introduce dairy components that make sense to a region.
Customer service is a big part of what we do, and part of that is understanding the consumer. And if the consumer in the Philippines wants just a protein boost in what they're already consuming, then obviously there's a dairy powder product answer there somewhere.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, USDA recently helped milk producers facing various economic and weather challenges through its suite of dairy assistance program. Rod Bain has more details.
Dairy producers have had their share of challenges in recent years. That has led the Agriculture Department to introduce programs designed to mitigate losses to dairy growers. Recently, the Farm Service Agency conducted sign-up for a new weather-related loss program.
The milk loss program is a program that helps producers offset economic loss that they had who had no other choice but to dump their milk during disasters.
According to Farm Service Agency Acting Deputy Administrator John Burge,
it allows eligible dairy operations to get payments for the milk that was dumped without compensation from the commercial milk market due to a qualifying weather event. And this particular rule that we just adopted is for events in 2020, 2021, and 2022.
And the definition of weather qualifying event under the Milk Loss Assistance Program?
Some of the qualifying disasters that we would take into account for this include blizzards, wildfires, hurricanes, derechos, excessive heat, and winter storms, a few others as well.
Organic dairy producers have also received two rounds of payments through a program known under the acronym ODMAP.
The Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance Program was established to help mitigate the volatility and higher input costs and transportation costs of organic dairy.
Looking at the payment breakdown,
we put out payments back in August or so. We paid out about $15 million, and then the second payment that we've announced will give out an additional $5 million to producers in that part of the industry.
Burge adds that ODMAP complements other dairy assistance programs, including USDA's flagship dairy margin coverage and its supplemental DMC option. He adds that producers that had DMC for the first 7 months of 2023 received program payments based on the trigger points for the income over feed margin. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. And the American Sheep Industry Association has announced registration is now open for their 2024 convention. It'll be held at the Sheraton Denver Downtown Hotel, and early bird rates apply through December the 8th. The annual convention is a one time a year when all facets of the American sheep industry come together to discuss topics that are timely and important to the industry. As a matter of fact, ASIA's Executive Director Peter Orwick said they encourage anyone with an interest in the industry to register and attend. They'll be working through the business of the association, educating leaders on important topics ranging from marketing and government policy to sheep health and genetics. So again, early bird sign-up is underway till December 8th. To learn more, simply go to sheepusa.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
What's in a name? That depends when it comes to groceries. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Most consumers appear to prefer brand name beverages over generic or store brand beverages. That's according to the September 2023 Consumer Food Insights Report. The Purdue University report further indicates that consumers make this choice even when presented with a sizable price discount on generic or store brand names. In contrast, most survey respondents said they were not willing to pay a premium for brand name meat, fruits, or vegetables. Not surprisingly, households making less than $50,000 a year were more price sensitive when presented with two generic or store brand options. The survey also shows the consumer food inflation estimate of 6.3% continues to diverge from the government's consumer price index of food inflation at 4.3%. While consumers with the lowest incomes already choose more generic brands over name brands, this disparity tends to grow quickly when the discount on generic or store brand foods is doubled from 15% to 30%. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. The majority of civil cases involving either personal injury to a farmer or rancher or damage to property is couched in negligence. The negligence system is a fault-based system. That means to prevail in a negligence action, you'll have to prove the elements by a preponderance of the evidence. What are the elements of a negligence case? Here are the basics. The defendant must have owed a legal duty to conduct themselves in a particular manner with respect to the plaintiff. The defendant's conduct must have fallen below that of a reasonable and prudent person under the circumstances. Then, a causal connection must be established between the defendant's act and the plaintiff's injuries, whether to person or property. In other words, the resulting harm to the plaintiff or the plaintiff's property must have been a reasonably foreseeable result of the defendant's conduct at the time the conduct occurred. Reasonable foreseeability is the essence of causality. That's known as proximate causation. The causation issue is often the most difficult one to prove. Cases involving causation in agriculture can involve such things as livestock deaths, fish kills, crop damage by chemicals, stray voltage in dairies, and malfunctioning machinery and equipment, just to name a few. Make sure you keep good records. They can be essential in helping you prove your case. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullough.
Social Security checks will see a 3.2% increase in January of next year. AARP Oklahoma State Director Sean Voskel says that's welcome news for seniors who are paying more for everything from gas to prescription medicines.
Retirees can rest a little easier at night knowing they will soon receive an increase in their Social Security checks on average of $59 per month to help them keep up with rising prices. Older Americans are still feeling the sting when they buy groceries and gas, making every dollar important. They should know, too, that there are several other options available to help them keep up with rising prices.
With Medicare enrollment now open through December 7th, Voskel says it's important to know how to save money on your premium.
The best place for more information is your state health insurance assistance program. It can give you personalized help choosing a Medicare plan for free. Check out the Medicare Savings Program and Extra Help, which could save you money with premiums, deductibles, and copays. These programs could save seniors more than $2,000 and $5,100 per year, respectively.
However, Voskel says older adults leave billions of dollars in government aid on the table each year and don't even realize it.
That money could go to cover utilities, rent, health care, prescription drugs, and groceries at a time when inflation remains stubbornly high. Look for programs such as the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. With this program, recipients get a one-time payment to help defray winter heating costs. The payment can be as high as $1,400, although the average payment is $500. AARP offers information available on this and many more at aarp.org.
Learn more Thursday night at 9 p.m. Central Time on RFD TV or online at aarp.org/AARP Live. Michael Clements reporting.
Total Factor Productivity, TFP. It's a yearly measure of agricultural productivity growth in the world, but not just increased production, but increased production that is sustainable over time. Growth not achieved by converting more land to agricultural use, not achieved by doing other things that will cause environmental problems later on. So TFP growth is what is needed. But a new report says to sustainably feed the world's population by the year 2050, the world's going to have to boost TFP an average of 1.91% every year from now until then. The report also says
we are on track to fall far below the TFP growth needed.
The report's editor, Dr. Tom Thompson with Virginia Tech University, speaking at an event in Washington to unveil the new report. Dr. Thompson says in the last few years, the world has managed to keep increasing productivity, but the amount of growth each year has been falling. And he says this is not just happening in the developing world and in poor countries. In fact,
average TFP growth in the United States has dropped markedly from 1.49% annually during the 1990s to slightly negative during 2011 to 2021.
Yes, no growth at all. And so this new report on global agricultural productivity
is sounding the alarm on the impact of climate change on agricultural productivity growth.
Undersecretary of Agriculture Alexis Taylor said there are multiple reasons for the slowdown in productivity, armed conflicts around the world, not enough support for ag research and development, but probably the biggest culprit is what she said there earlier, climate change. And according to one study,
global agricultural productivity growth on average is 21% lower than it would have been without climate change. That is equivalent to 7 years of lost farm productivity advances since 1960.
So how do the experts say the world can sustainably boost ag productivity?
through science and innovation.
We need to enhance the environment for productivity-enhancing tools, reduce barriers to adopting those tools, and find opportunities to reduce the impact of external forces and shocks to make innovations available to farmers at all scales of agriculture.
And through public-private partnerships that foster development and adoption of new technologies.
Such as the over 140 projects now in operation under USDA's ambitious Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities program. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Good harvest weather ahead should push corn and soybean progress toward 3/4 complete a week from today. And keep an eye on the energy sector. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report this Tuesday, brought to you by Kloss Equipment, makers of the Treon 740 Combine. Check it out at Kloss.com, C-L-A-A-S.com. Combines are rolling and battling some lodged corn in some areas of the central and northern belt, we're hearing. Dry weather in early South American season makes every bushel count here, especially in soybeans. January beans over 1310, 1315 will feel resistance, but dips below 1290, we think, are buying opportunities. December corn can make another run at $5, but 505, 507, again, will slow the buying in a hurry. And Middle East countries are stockpiling more wheat, we're hearing. U.S. soft red is the cheapest wheat in the world, and we'll get some attention from here. This is the Bottom Line Report. Bottom line analysts are keeping an eye on stories detailing a worldwide shortage of diesel fuel. Producers here are encouraged to forward price some of their spring needs now. That's our bottom line report. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Some big moves for global leaders in cotton.
South American cotton production forecasts are predominant in USDA's look at world production. Yet World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jankowski notes an important caveat.
Kind of an accounting change that we made in the manner in which we treat Brazil's production. We shifted Brazil's production ahead one marketing year to better reflect when that crop is available on the market.
So while Brazilian cotton production forecasts month over month rose by 800,000 bales within USDA's global balance sheet,
only 200,000 of that reflects a yield increase. The remaining 600,000 just reflects this shift in the way we account for Brazil's production.
Argentinian cotton production forecasts also increased from the prior month. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
I'm in my garage here, just me and my memories. Memories of this lawnmower right here that I'm working on. Help on the speakerphone, though, from Ward Upham. He's an extension horticultural expert, Kansas State University. And I was telling him a sad story. Well, it wasn't that sad. It was years ago. First summer in the new house with the big yard, and I had to switch from an electric mower to gas. Things went great that summer. After the last grass cutting, rolled this new mower into the garage here and forgot about it until the next spring when I topped off the tank with gas and pulled the cord. Nothing. would not crank. Instead, I was cranky. Later, though, I found out what the problem was, and Warren Upham and I thought maybe we'd save somebody that same experience come spring by going over how to winterize the lawnmower. And of course, Warren, you knew what the problem was right off the bat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had left gas in the gas tank. Didn't think anything about it, and Warren, you know what happened.
That gas just got old. It can become gummy if it sits too long. So you need to, at the end of the season, either drain that gas or treat it with a stabilizer. After you treated it, start that engine and let it run long enough that that treated gas gets into the carburetor.
As it was, I had to take the mower to a repair place where they laughed and handed me a nice bill for a carburetor cleaning. So getting the gas out is the first step in winterizing. Now, beyond that, Ward, what else?
Go ahead and pull the spark plug out and see if it looks good.
Uh-huh. Well, what is a bad look for a spark plug?
If the tip of that spark plug is black, that means the carburetor is running a little rich. If it's kind of a whitish color, it's running lean. Either of those problems, you probably should take it in and have them adjust that so that it's running at the right amount of fuel-air mixture. Or if it looks really bad, just replace the spark plug.
Well, this one looks okay, so I'll just keep it. So, no gas in the machine. Let me tilt it up here and look underneath. Oh, look at that blade. That thing is duller than some of my radio shows. Oh, don't laugh. It's true on both counts. This thing needs sharpening badly.
Commercial people will sharpen those blades about every 10 hours of use.
Well, I'm close. I sharpen it every 10 years.
Yeah. But you don't want it razor sharp. If it's razor sharp, it'll often turn over so that the edge of that blade becomes dull right away.
Okay, so I'm done now winterizing the mower, right?
Nope.
No. Oh, yes, air filter right here. Yeah, I got to clean that thing or replace it.
I've had people that have had lawnmowers that just won't run, and the reason is that air filter is so dirty it can't get the oxygen it needs in order to run.
Same thing happens to me. So now that's it, right?
I think that's it that I can think of.
So, okay, Ward, now if I come out here next spring and this thing won't run, I'm going to be mailing it to you, care of Kansas State University.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding, Ward, I'm not. I'll do it, Gary Crawford. I will. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the show. For today's interview segment, we have the latest episode of the Farmside Chat, where President Zippy Duvall talks with Charlotte Mortimer of Mortimer Farms in Arizona.
Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Thank you. Glad to be here and glad to have had you at our farm before. So thanks again.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and your husband and your family.
So I'm Charlotte Mortimer. My husband, Gary, and I, about 20 years ago, decided that we wanted to be in agriculture. He was raised on a farm in Iowa. I was raised on a farm here in Arizona. And both of our families had moved away from the farms. But as we met, married, and decided to start our family, we recognized the impact that agriculture had had in our early lives and wanted that for our kids as well. So about 21 years ago, we ended up buying a cattle ranch here just outside of Prescott, Arizona, and started doing, getting very involved with Farm Bureau and with ag education. I was doing field trips and all kinds of fun things like that. And then 12 years ago, we were approached to start a farm here in Dewey, Arizona, which is about, 10 minutes or half an hour outside of Prescott. And start a farm here. And it was actually slated for development. And we were asked to come and caretake and grow it in the meantime until they got the development going. So that's where we started.
Slated for development means, it was practically lost from agriculture. Tell us how you were able to save that.
So that's a really interesting story that doesn't happen hardly ever. And so we're very excited. I think it was about 100 miracles all wrapped into one. So we're done asking for any future miracles. We've already had ours. But what happened was it was a farm before that was sold to development. There was some issues with water and getting that development organized with the town and stuff like that. And so they were trying to work through all of that. They'd been working on it for 15 years and they decided kind of overnight that, you know, they were done. And so we had been here at that point for 10 years and had been farming it and building a business to support the farm and to support the land that we were here. And so we took the opportunity to buy it back from the development and move forward with the farm. So we're really excited that we are now permanent owners of this property and will continue to do agritourism here for many years to come.
Can you tell us how big the farm is there?
This farm is 350 acres. The Aguafria River runs right through the one side of it. And so there's about 100 acres of riparian area and then about 250 acres of commercial and farmland.
Okay. Tell us how the farm has changed since y'all started.
So when we got here 12 years ago at this location, it was weeds, huge weeds. You couldn't even see the pickup truck driving through the middle of the field. So it was just covered over in terrible noxious weeds. So we started to grow and to clean it and to, you know, get rid of all the dead trees. It had sat vacant for 14 years at that point. Or no, I'm sorry. At that point, it was 7 years that it had been fallowed. And so we were able to just start, you know, bringing back that, you know, getting the soils exposed and trying to get stuff planted and getting it ready for farming. And so our first year we planted sweet corn and pumpkins and that was it. And now we grow over 56 different fruits and vegetables here at the farm and do you pick and all kinds of events and stuff that families come out, visit and participate in.
So you pick provides you a great opportunity to educate people and teach them about agriculture. Tell us a little bit about that.
So ag education is my passion. Like I told you before, Gary and I's early childhood was all agriculture. And so we recognized how important that was in our lives. And then as we raised our family on the ranch and got them exposed to agriculture and understanding those things, and we'd go to classrooms and do ice cream in my kids' kindergarten classrooms or, you know, stuff like that we would just go and do. We did field trips out at the ranch as well. And so we just were always doing that education piece of it. And I loved it. I always say that there's nothing that a kid can't learn on a farm and in the dirt. And they have to have the dirt in order to learn that. And so that was really where my passion was. And when we took over this farm, it was with the intention to have this farm open to the public, to be able to do field trips, to be able to do events and have families come out and get that experience and that exposure to agriculture. So that's where my whole passion is. And that's why we're here today. Gary loves the farming piece of it and he can grow all the stuff and then I get to teach and play with it. So it's a partnership made in heaven, let me tell you.
So what fruit or vegetable do you like growing the most?
Oh my goodness. So I think it depends on whatever's in season. Today my favorite is blackberries. We've actually just recently taken and started doing blackberries and strawberries as well. Blackberries is a lot more prolific and easier crop to grow in this climate. It just seems to be very happy here. And so they've been really great. But like I said, we grow 56 different kinds of fruits and vegetables. Tomatoes are another one that I love. Tomatoes, fresh, good tomatoes are amazing. And so we actually put in a greenhouse a few years ago, or multiple greenhouses, but we did that with the intention that we can have tomatoes year round. And so that was the hope there. So yeah, there's lots of really great things. I think anything you can eat, you know, the closer to the vine you can get it, the better the flavor is. And, you know, it's just so much fun to let families come out and see that for themselves.
I think everybody understands that and knows that sometimes people are not as fortunate to be able to have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And I think farmers and ranchers are working hard to try to solve that problem. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
So tell us what a day in your life looks like. I mean, it'd be interesting to me, what time do you open the farm up? Which day of the week's the most busiest? You know, how many people do you average a day? Be interesting.
Yeah, sure. So we're very seasonal. Right now we're open from 7 to 7 every day of the week. I have, we have great staff that run the store. We've got a country store here, market on the property that's open that entire time all week long. And so people can just drop in anytime they want. They can get a pass to come out to the farm and be able to go out and pick their own vegetables and plan some of the activities that we have here. And then I've also got lots of fruits and vegetables and other things that we grow there at the store that they can just go in and pick that up without having to go out and pick it themselves. So they have the option if they want to come out to the farm too, or if they just want to just go pick up their groceries for the week. All right. So that's kind of our day to day. Every day of the week, we're open there. And that's year round. We're open 12 months of the year. I think we're closed 3 days. So other than that, the farm is open and available for families to come out and enjoy. We have in our country store, we have a lot of canned foods as well as the fresh vegetables. We also grow beef and pork. And so that's also for sale in our store. And then we have a bakery department. So we've got bakers there every day baking off all these fresh veggies or fresh, not veggies. We don't bake veggies. Fresh treats and sandwiches and fudge, different things like that, that they can make for us. And so that gets that daily local traffic coming back all the time so they can see what's new in the store.
So who needs a grocery store in Dewey, right?
Well, I say if I have to go to the grocery store to get it, I've got to change my plan so that we have room for it in our store, because I don't like going to the grocery store. So I try to make it so everything is right here available. We've got a bread company that's local that delivers to us. And so we sell their bread and just all kinds of delicious things that we have available in the store.
So we kind of dated this because you said that blackberries were in, and so that we're doing this in August, but it's going to run during October. So what is the favorite fruit vegetable in October?
Well, there you go. Like I said, it depends what we're harvesting at the time, right? And so, pumpkins is the favorite at that point. Everybody loves to come out and experience the farm during the fall and sit under these big, beautiful, I'm actually under one of these huge cottonwood trees right here. And they love the giant 100-year-old cottonwood trees that we have. And they go out into the fields and pick their pumpkins and go through the corn maze and get to experience that whole piece of it. So it's a ton of fun. But yeah, pumpkins are a lot of fun. We grow over 50 different varieties of pumpkins here. And so they're so diverse and all different colors and shapes and sizes, and people love them. And so it's a lot of fun to be able to do that and have them go right out to the fields and pick it for themselves.
So I'm a cow guy and a chicken guy. So I don't have the greenest thumb in the world. I can grow grass, but I hadn't had much luck with pumpkins. So tell me about when do you plant them? How long does it take? Can you grow a big one? And tell us a little bit about the plant itself.
Absolutely. Yeah, pumpkins are a fun plant. You can actually see the entire growth system on the plant at any point in time. Or, you know, as you're harvesting pumpkins, you can also all see it just all the way back to the flower at the same time. And so it's kind of a fun plant. We're going to grow them 90 to 120 days before we want to harvest them. So we actually plant the end of June is when we plant here. And then they'll be ready for harvest the beginning of October. I did plant some giant pumpkins this year. They should get to be about 500 pounds. So they're going to be big, big pumpkins. And those ones we planted in March. So that tells you that in order to develop all the way, they need a lot more time to do that. So we've got, I think, about 30 of those plants. So we'll see how many nice giant pumpkins we end up with this year.
Yeah, you're going to have to call me and give me a report on that. That'd be interesting.
We'll do. I'll send you some pictures.
All right. That would be awesome. So, you know, I know a lot of people buy a pumpkin for a jack-o'-lantern. They carve it. A lot of people want to buy a pumpkin to put in a pie. Are they different varieties that make the best, or can you buy one and carve it and then make pie out of it?
So yes and yes.
Okay.
Or as the attorneys say in my life, yes, and it depends, right? So yeah, you can. There are special pumpkins for pies. They call them pie pumpkins or sweetie pie pumpkins. They've got a higher sugar content, and so the flavor of them is going to be a little bit sweeter. Most of the time, they're the smaller kind of cantaloupe-sized pumpkin is going to be those sweeter pumpkins. But you can just do a regular jack-o'-lantern pumpkin, carve it, enjoy it for a couple of days, and then go ahead and cook it off for your pumpkin too, for your pies as well. So, it works both ways. You're just going to have to add a little bit more sweetener to the jack-o'-lantern pumpkin to get that really nice sweet pumpkin pie.
This was just a portion of that episode. To listen to the full conversation, visit fb.org. Stay tuned. We'll have more Ag News after the break.
GMOs? Genetically engineered, bioengineered, what's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The strawberry industry is maintaining positive momentum, but there are some lingering concerns moving forward. Senior Director of Strawberry Product Leadership with Driscoll's, Andrew Wolf, detailed some of the challenges the industry is collectively working to address.
And where we see the strawberry category right now is really actually very healthy. The category is growing, demand is way up, and we also see supply rising to meet that demand, but not enough. And where we've seen this is, you know, we've seen pricing go up. We know that costs and consistency of quality have really been challenges in the past. Prices have really risen over the last, 5 to 6 years. The challenge for us as an industry overall is managing ever-increasing costs, going up 10, 15, 20% in some ways in harvest and non-harvest related activities, especially to do with labor, but also to do with capital and, overall. So that costs, as well as the consistency of quality, consistency of flavor, and making sure that it meets that rising demand, meets, what the consumers are paying for. We want to be able to deliver on a consistent basis throughout the entire year. And those are major hurdles that we're confronting as not just for Driscoll's, but really as an overall industry to confront. And we know that innovation is already playing a role and is going to be playing a major, bigger role in helping us solve those.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media, at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.